You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 18th of October 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are broadcasting live tonight at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how you doing, sir?
Well, fortunately, a devastating cold cleared up just a couple of days ago. Otherwise, I'm afraid I'd be flatlining.
Yeah, I don't feel too good myself. My voice doesn't sound right. I've sounded a little bit nasal myself. I've had a bit of a cold this week. I'm a little bit run down, but we soldier on. We produce these podcasts, well, come rain or shine, don't we?
I can rest assured you, if there's anything going to drive these Africans back to Africa, it is the European cold.
I hope so. If only it were that easy. If only it were that easy, Dennis. So you haven't had it. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, if I was African, I'd be thinking about it after cold, I understand.
Yeah, I bet. So you haven't been, you haven't had a chance to work on the final episode yet then, over the last week?
Yes, I believe it or not, I have done some work, yeah. And it's almost complete. It's not that far away now.
I must admit, you're coming through really loud and clear, Dennis. That new microphone of yours is a big improvement.
I think so, yeah. From what I was listening to the podcast back the other day, and it sounded really good. You know, it sounded like even I could understand it.
Yeah, we've had a lot of comments. I forget whether they were on Gab or elsewhere and in the chat room, people saying that it's made a big improvement. And it helps people to be able to listen to what you say. I'm actually going back over the Axis War Heroes series that Messerschmitt did a few years back with us, and I've been putting them together. I've got the first five of them together, so I'm going to republish them in a couple of weeks' time, because we probably got listeners that didn't actually get a chance to hear that. I think it's going to be interesting listening to those again and seeing the sort of things we were talking about two or three years back, Dennis. It's a good series. yeah, it is a little bit difficult to hear what you were saying. Just before we get into this real podcast tonight as well, I just wanted to put a bit of an advert out there for Patriotic Alternative, Mark Cullett's organisation. We've been looking for a nationalist organisation that we can really get behind and support here at Radio Aryan for a few years now. You know, we tried to support the National Front, we support Western Spring. Neither of them really seem to be doing that much, and that's not meant to be taken as, you know, as an insult to them at all. Far from it. I mean, Max Musson is my co-host on Aryan Britannia here, but Mark Cullett's Patriotic Alternative, I think that is going to go somewhere. He's got the drive. He's the right age to be doing it. He's got integrity. He's got experience. And I would hope that all our listeners would go over to the Patriotic Alternative website and sign up there so that he gets a nice big members list and people can start getting involved in activities. I've put the advert on the website in the sidebar, and I've been meaning to mention it in these podcasts for a couple of weeks now, so I'm doing it now. So I hope all our British listeners will go and sign up over there, so that we get a nice big mailing list and we get a lot of people with a lot of resources that we can make use of in our activism. Do you want to comment on that, Dennis?
Yeah, I mean, it's a brave lady. I think it's a British Earl as well, where she enters 91 years of age, which is an absolute crime in itself to be, away from her family and friends for such a law that accounts for just one event in history which needs protecting.
Did you slip in a time machine there and something, Dennis? You slip in a time machine there and hear the next subject I was going to be talking about first? I think you must have done. Yeah, I haven't started talking about Ursula Haverbeck yet. I was just talking about...
Oh, sorry, I thought we were just Mark. Asking for my opinion. All right.
Yeah, on that, on the Patriotic Alternative, because you were there at the conference, weren't you?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was just gonna add before you asked me, or what I thought you asked me. I was just gonna say that I'm gonna have a look over myself because there's some. I didn't catch all the speeches, obviously, but the ones I did, I thought were excellent. And then I caught up with one or two in the recordings later. So yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's got potential. You know, they're on the same. Same wavelength as we are, the racial nationalists.
Talk about image as well. They concentrated a lot on the image, saying,
"Yeah,
you know, that the old image as they paint the right, you know, has to be protected. You know, I mean, this new image rather than the old image, the skinhead and whatever. So this new image of just walking into a bar and seeing a group of people talking, it could be a wedding, it could be anything, but really approachable because of the dress."
Yeah, that's it. We've got to put a good image across to people, and we've got to set a good example, and we've got to make it so that people want to join up with us. They want to know what it is that we've got that makes us special. You know, nationalists should be the elite of society, and I think that's what we definitely had there at that conference. So if that can transfer to membership, then I think we'll see big things from the organisation. But yeah, what we were going to bring up first of all tonight is Ursula Haverbeck, because I've had an email from Richard Edmonds. Ursula Haverbeck, people should remember, she's incarcerated at the moment in Germany, and she's 90 years old, and she's in a prison for investigating events in past history, which of course you're not allowed to do in Germany. They've got laws to prevent you from investigating what really went on during the war. And she's fallen foul of it. But I wanted to bring up this email because it's quite inspiring, really, to hear that so many people have rallied around her. And this, as I say, this comes from Richard Edmonds. He says, "Dear friends, today I received a further letter from our brave Ursula locked up in the Bielefeld jail. She writes that she is in good spirits. She is amazed at all the many, many letters of support that she is receiving from right across the world. So many good people writing to her to express their outrage that a woman of 90 years of age is locked up for simply expressing her opinions. These many letters are embarrassing the prison authorities, who have to read all these condemnations of their system. Also, Ursula writes, there are so many letters and cards coming in addressed to her that the prison censorship department is at risk of being overwhelmed and collapsing. What a laugh. Also, Ursula is still receiving bunches and bunches of flowers, which make her little room really agreeable. So, friends, keep writing letters and cards of support." And I'll put the address for people to write to in the article that accompanies the podcast. "Friends and supporters can order flowers for her from the local flower shop by writing a simple request. Flowers for Frau Ursula Haverbeck, JVL, Bielefeld, Brackfeld, Umlerstrasse 100, Bielefeld, and include a €20 note, bill or billet in the envelope. That's quite safe, and euro notes, bills and billets can be obtained simply at a travel agent. Include a note saying the flowers are for Ursula Haverbeck. They now know her well, and give a brief message. Best wishes from XXX town, city, country. Simple but effective. Further good news, our brave friend is not locked up in a prison cell 23 hours a day, but resides in a communal safe house with other detained female prisoners. They have daytime access to a common room, plus a kitchen, etc. They may retire to their own rooms during the day. There is a garden which they may walk around, and the whole is contained within the prison compound. Next month, on the 9th of November, Ursula will celebrate her 91st birthday. For the event, the police have given permission for Friends of Truth and Freedom to parade through the centre of Bielefeld in her name. Finally, Ursula informs me in her letter that it is now impossible for her to thank all the kind individuals who have written to her, so asks me to publicise on the internet her thanks and best wishes to all." And that message there is passed through Richard Edmonds. So that's very encouraging to hear, isn't it? It's a cell or her room in the prison is full of flowers, and she's been overwhelmed with cards and letters. I mean, that's fantastic news, that is.
It is, but on the other side of it, I believe she's the type of woman who will not lie down. I mean, if she's ever released, when you know, when that's due, she's the type of woman who will again, I think, cross swords. And so, how long this will go on for, I don't know, because she's, like I said, she's 91 and a terrific fighter. And I don't think she's going to lie down. And I don't think she's going to ever stop trying to push the message.
Well, that's it. You know, if you know that there's an injustice somewhere, and you know that people are believing a lie, and it's a huge lie that is hurting millions of people, then, you know, you have to do what you can to get the truth out. Otherwise, you wouldn't be true to yourself, you wouldn't be true to your people, you wouldn't be true to humanity. So, you know, you can't give up these things. And, you know, all credit to her for having the courage at that age, you know, to continue with this crusade for the truth.
It's a great credit to her, but like I said, you know, she could suffer in the long run because of the crossing the swords. I mean, the video that you sent me this week about the actual racism in Bulgaria this week, the father and son who were talking, they could do to listen to one or two of her interviews. I'm quite sure they will be enlightened.
Well, that's an example of just how brainwashed people are, isn't it? No doubt people like that would say, oh, yes, it's a jolly good thing that we lock these people up that deny the Holocaust. There are people out there that just don't actually think about the consequences of their actions or what they are actually talking about. You know, people...
Exactly. I mean, they talk about democracy, and yet they were saying that, I mean, they've gone into another country and they've told the Bulgarians how to behave. Now, you know, I don't know where they come from that angle, but I certainly agree with what they said.
Well, it's very, very insulting, isn't it? I mean, they can say over here, well, we don't like this language that was used, but, you know, if they want to make jokes at, you know, at a footballer, why is it international news?
Communism as well, remember.
Yeah,
you know, they've had real communism then, so you know they are clued up.
They've seen absolute horrors under the state. I think what they were trying to do is shame Britain, the English team. You know, how dare you send people over here calling them English when they're not English, they're Africans? And why aren't you standing up for it? Why aren't you stopping this from happening in your country? Because we won't let it happen in ours. I think that's. What they were saying.
Yeah, and fair play to them. Can I just mention as well that, you know, the fascist Croatia has been banned from FIFA computer game, even though they came runners-up in the World Cup. But in my opinion, they won the World Cup because I did think the game was fixed. When they played France, who have maybe one or two white players in that side. So, Croatia banned from FIFA computer.
Is that because their supporters are... nationalists mainly?
I'm pretty sure that it's because they support one or two fascist people when they got back home publicly.
Yeah, I've just got a message here in the chat room from a Bulgarian, Okuma10. He says, I think what it all boils down to is just that the Bulgarians are mocking the English fans for their support of a team that is not English. There you go. That's how the Bulgarians feel about it. And you could say that they're trying to do us a favour, really. They're trying to get us to wake up. I don't understand the Russian salutes.
Well, these two people weren't waking up, were they?
No.
Well brainwashed.
I don't understand the Roman salutes. Normally you salute somebody, you know, it's a positive thing. If you think somebody's done well, you salute them.
Been sold as a racist... salute, even though it's not. I think it's been sold to a lot of people like that who just assume that it's the Nazis and Hitler.
I guess they just wanted to trigger people, isn't it? And you know, and have a laugh. Look, all you have to do is raise your arm up in the air and they go absolutely crazy and it becomes international news. How ridiculous is that?
Well, you're badly German, aren't you? I think it's a prison sentence.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's what that boils down to. Again, it's just highlighting the absurdity of it being an international incident because somebody raised their arm up in the air. So ridiculous. And it probably wakes a lot of people up, actually, to just how anti-white and ridiculous and ludicrous this system is that we have. The more they push things like that, you know, that was a news cycle for about 4 days. And it took up about three quarters of the news as well. Ludicrous. Ludicrous. Anyway, we're going to get into our subject for tonight, which you picked, Dennis, Count Kudinov Kalergi. And I thought we might have done something on him before. Did we? But I couldn't find a podcast that we did that just concentrated on him solely. Can you remember us doing anything on him before?
We have done a bit on him because I included him in one or two episodes in Communism by the Back Door. But with all the goings on in Bulgaria this week, I thought it'd be nice to refresh things a little bit.
Well, there's a lot of information there that I didn't realise. I'm not sure he actually had a Wikipedia page a while back because he wasn't that well known. There was just that quote of his from that book that he wrote about mixing up all the races. And, you know, the mainstream tried to pretend that that didn't exist. But now I guess they've had to admit that it does exist, and they've had to put a Wikipedia page up for him. And there's quite a lot of interesting information there. Obviously, he's the ideological father of the European Union, which is why they have the Kudinov Kalergi Prize. But I think they call it something different now, don't they? And they try not to, as I say, they try not to let it on. Yeah, Charlemagne. Charlemagne. They try not to let it on that they were actually very influenced by Kudinov Kalergi, but they were. Well, let's have a look at the beginning of his life. On every Good Friday, as the liturgy came to the exhortation, Orimus et pro perfidius Judaeus, which is, let us also pray for the faithless Jews, the young Kalergi allegedly rose and walked out of the church in a protest against this supposed expression of anti-Semitism. Do you believe that? Do you think he was doing that at 18, 19?
Surprised to find him in a church, to be honest.
Yeah. Was he really going to church? And he tries to say he's not Jewish. They tried to say that he's not actually Jewish. And his mother was Japanese, I think, and father was something else. Yet his wife was Jewish, and he was a mongrel, basically. But the National Socialists said he was Jewish. Yeah, they said he was Jewish, but haven't seen any actual evidence of it apart from his activities.
The real mixture, though, he really is.
Mm. During his student years, Kudinov Kalergi married the famous Jewish Viennese actress Ida Roland in April 1915. His marriage to a divorcee, 13 years his senior, and a commoner, caused a temporary split with his family. His mother Mitsuku did not accept Ida, considering her a beggar living on the riverbank, a traditional Japanese point of view against actors and performers. Well, interesting that he married this woman 13 years his senior. I guess Macron's wife is a lot older than that, 13 years, but that's still quite a lot when you think he must have married when he was, you know, about 20, and he's marrying someone here that's 33. Don't you think?
I think he lost his virginity at 13 as well, by the way.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they were all very degenerate, these communist types. I'm trying to think of the guy that did the orgone energy. He was an absolute degenerate, he was. He was getting it on with the housemaids at about 11 or 12. Reich, that was his name.
I think the key to all this, for people listening out there who sometimes doubt Hitler, some people say he's a Rothschild, some people say he helped build Israel, the key to all this is Freemasonry. And as we develop the story, it will find the role that Freemasonry plays in this, what's going on in Europe today, and the fact that Hitler tried to destroy it, in fact, did destroy it, only came back once the Allies had won the war. I really think, you know, after doing the last episode of the victory, the World War II victory of the Freemasons' secret victory, that I now understand that Freemasonry is the key to it all. And because Franco, all the others, Mussolini, they all destroyed Freemasonry, which means they were all on the same page, as the Catholic Church as well.
Well, Wikipedia has even been forced to admit that he has Masonic connections. In December 1921, he joined the Masonic Lodge Humanitas in Vienna, and other lodges supported his movement for a pan-European superstate not built on race, but shared culture. And obviously that's the way that it's put in Wikipedia, but they don't mean shared European culture. They mean just any old human being can join and be part of this pan-European superstate. The more racially different to Europeans, the better, because they just want to mix it all up, basically. So it admits here that he's got these Masonic links, and the Masons were helping him out. Kudinov Kalergi mentioned in his autobiography that he had been financed by the Rothschilds and the Warburgs, and in the US by Paul Warburg and Bernard Baruch. He was connected with the Turn and Taxis family. His grandfather, Count Francis Kudinov Kalergi, Austrian ambassador in Paris, had married Marie Kalergi in 1850. She was one of the wealthiest heiresses in Europe, descended from the Byzantine Emperor Nikephor Phaikas in 1300, when Venice was the dominant power in the Mediterranean. Alexiwar Kalergis had signed the treaty which made Crete a dominion of Venice. A recent premier of Greece, Emmanuel Souderos, was a Kalergi. So he had a lot of connections there, and a lot of connections with the banks as well, and pretty high up in the banks, Paul Warburg and Bernard Baruch. Wasn't Bernard Baruch something to do with the war spending in America?
The Bohemian Grove, all this.
I think he had the purse strings during the First World War.
Bernard Baruch. I think he's about 400 million he made.
There was a lot that Henry Ford wrote about him. And what about this Paul Warburg? I've heard his name as well.
Yeah, I think he was one of the German bankers who went to the brothers weren't the one went to America, and they were obviously trying to bring Germany down, as we found out with the Dawes Plan.
Well, thanks to his close contacts with European aristocrats and politicians, and due to the network of relationships created by his nobleman diplomat father, and I think we can add to that, and also all his Freemason connections, Richard von Kudinov Kalergi was able to work unseen, away from the glare of publicity, and he managed to engage the cooperation of the most influential European heads of state for his plan, making them supporters and collaborators in his project of European integration. I mean, that is so obvious, isn't it, that this was, you know, this plot was hatched in the Freemasons' lodge, wasn't it? In the lodges around Austria.
Yeah, it's not something that would be public, is it, really? It's not just genocide as such. It's everything pushed, brainwashed and everything. Like this couple we saw on this YouTube video, who were totally brainwashed into believing that there's nothing wrong with bringing all these Africans in and white marrying these people, the white race marrying into them.
Yeah, nothing wrong with just genociding the whole British race, yeah. The English race, the Welsh race.
Let me call them. I think when they jump off a cliff, isn't it?
Nothing wrong with it. Even though it goes totally against all their instincts. These people, when they see things like that, their instincts tell them that it's wrong. But then they, you know, they beat down their conscience and say, oh, that's terrible, immoral thought to actually say that. And they double down and, you know, pretend that it's absolutely fine. But yeah, but this bit here, though, Dennis, I mean, this whole passage here, there's no way any of that could have taken place if he wasn't doing this within the lodges. Because where else is he going to be away from the glare of publicity and yet at the same time engage the cooperation of all the most influential European heads of state and get them all to be supporters and collaborators? And that's the only place.
TV campaign, does it? He's already got all the connections.
Yeah, well, that's where all these people are going to be, and that's going to be away from the journalists. No, it's
but even the journalists are part of it, because they stay quiet, because a lot of them were working for the same people.
Well, a lot of them are Freemasons. But what goes on in the Freemasons' lodge is that, you know, they don't talk about them, do they? They've taken an oath not to discuss what actually goes on there. But and again, he can also make connections there between the underworld as well as the politicians and people from all different walks of life, and get them all to support this plan of his. Project of European Integration, as he called it. Well, in 1922, go on.
I was going to say pure evil. It's how somebody can sit down and think of such a plan and then go ahead and tell it to all his friends and they all agree. It's just, I don't know.
Well, I guess they sort of must, I guess they pushed it as, you know, well, we want the Europeans to get closer together. We want to have this integration. And then eventually when it gets big enough, we can let in other countries and we'll let the Africans in and the Arabs in. You know, you can imagine him saying like saying it like that to some people and trying to sell the idea. You know,
they came straight out with the get very far, but yeah, covertly. I mean, and you look at people like Edward Heath, he didn't tell us the full story when he took us in. You know, hopefully we're going to be coming out, but I mean, even then, still a lot to do, I think.
And the fact he's a mongrel himself, obviously, you know, he's going to want everybody else to be a mongrel. He doesn't want to be a mongrel on his own. Yeah, so he's got a personal rule
as well, doesn't he? He does think he's still above these coffee ones.
Yeah. Well, in 1922, he founded the Pan-European Movement in Vienna, which aimed to create a new world order based on a federation of nations led by the United States. European integration would be just the first step in creating a world government. His earliest supporters included Czech politicians Thomas Masaryk and Eduard Benes, and the German Jewish banker Max Warburg, who invested 60,000 marks in the project. With the rise of fascism in Europe during the 1930s, the project of European integration was abandoned, and the Pan-European movement was forced to dissolve. However, after the Second World War, and thanks to frantic and tireless activity and the support from Winston Churchill, the Jewish Masonic Lodge B'nai B'rith, and major newspapers like the New York Times, Kalergi managed to gain acceptance for his plan by the United States government, and later the CIA became involved in driving the plan towards completion. Now, it's quite amazing this. You know, we get accused of conspiracy theories of saying that these lodges get together and they wanted a new world order and they wanted a world government. And, you know, when we say that, it's a conspiracy theory. And yet this is fact. This is what went on. That's what this movement was.
Benes, by the way, of Czechoslovakia, he clashed with Hitler. I can remember doing the great story when the German minority in Czechoslovakia were starting to suffer. He threatened to invade, and obviously the peace treaty in Munich sorted that out. But Benes had to come to England at one stage. He was being hunted down by Germany.
Well, we've also got the bit here that he's calling it the Pan-European Movement, and now obviously it's called the European Union. So the people that are in the European Union will try and say that it's a different thing, but Kudinov Kalergi proposed Beethoven's Ode to Joy as the anthem of Europe in 1929 for his Pan-European Movement, and then he later proposed it in 1955 as the anthem for the European Union. And what is the anthem of the European Union? It's the Ode to Joy. So in 1955, he was still important enough to be the guy that gets to say what the European Union anthem is going to be. So he's got to be the architect of it, hasn't he, really, to be important?
Well, yeah. I mean, after World War II, we were probably lauded, weren't we? It was, he had a free reign then.
I'm just thinking you're a little bit quieter than usual here, Dennis. Can anyone in the chat room tell me if Dennis is exceptionally quiet? Let me have a look here.
Hello, chat room.
Yeah, that sounds better. That sounds more like it, Dennis. Right, where do we get to here? His pan-Europeanism... Yeah, they're saying you're a bit quiet. So, yeah, stay like that, Dennis, wherever the mic is now.
Okay.
However, his pan-Europeanism earned vivid loathing from Adolf Hitler, who excoriated its pacifism and mechanical economism and belittled its founder as a bastard. Hitler's view of Kudinov Kalergi was that the rootless, cosmopolitan, elitist half-breed was going to repeat the historical mistakes of Kudinov's ancestors who had served the House of Habsburg. Now, I think this is really important because people will try and say that the EU was somehow founded by Nazis, or it was a Nazi idea.
They tried that one.
And obviously it wasn't. Hitler was against this, and he was saying that that was a mistake that they'd already tried before with the House of Habsburg. And he was against this, and he was against Kalergi.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't agree with the nations losing the sovereignty. He wanted nations to keep the sovereignty. And yet, you know, form an alliance in Europe, which would have kept the Rothschilds at bay for a good 1,000 years.
Yeah, the people will try and say that Hitler wanted to invade these countries and take them over. No, that's nonsense. If he'd have wanted that, he would have gone along with this idea for this world government, this supranational government, and just said, well, we'll have the same, but we'll have Germany running it instead of the USA. And I question it there where they say that it's going to be the USA that runs it, because he was talking about a Jewish elite running it, wasn't he, in his book?
Yeah, well, Israel's just an office, isn't it, really?
I guess America is run by a Jewish elite, so it's the same thing.
Right. Yeah.
National Socialist views on Kudinov Kalergi. The Nazis considered the Pan-European Union to be under the control of Freemasonry. I wonder where they get that idea from. In 1938, a National Socialist propaganda book, Die Freimaurer Weltanschauung, Organization and Politik, was released in German. It revealed Kudinov Kalergi's membership of Freemasonry, the organization suppressed by the National Socialists. The book stated that the Grand Lodge of Vienna went enthusiastically to work for the Pan-European Union in a call to all Masonic chief authorities. Even the Masonic newspaper The Beacon enthused about the thoughts of the higher degree Freemason Kudinov Kalergi and stated in March 1925, Freemasonry, especially Austrian Freemasonry, may be eminently satisfied to have Kudinov Kalergi among its members. Austrian Freemasonry can rightly report that Brother Kudinov Kalergi fights for his pan-European beliefs, political honesty, social insight, the struggle against lies, striving for the recognition and cooperation of all those of goodwill. In this higher sense, Brother Kudinov Kalergi's program is a Masonic work of the highest order, and to be able to work on it together is a lofty task for all Brother Masons. So there's the, you know, they're admitting there how important it was. It was hugely important, and it was the Masons were intimately tied up in it, in getting this plan off the ground.
Well, I had an argument once with a 32 degree, I think I told you about it once, where the guy refused to talk to me anymore because I said Freemasonry was the root of communism. And he absolutely refused. He was American, and he would not continue the conversation. He just did not understand Freemasonry.
It's behind all of these pushes towards a new world order, isn't it? You know, the Soviet Revolution, French Revolution, behind this EU thing. I mean, because you could look at them all and you could say, well, there are all these differences between them, but the one thing that unites them all is that the plot was all hatched in a Freemason's lodge.
Which is like I said about Hitler, you know, when people doubt him, he certainly didn't agree with it, and his actions were to destroy it. So, and I guarantee every winner of the Charmaine Prize or Kalergi Prize, what you want to call it, will be a Freemason. I'd bet every single dime I had.
Yeah, it's a Freemasonic organisation, basically. I mean, they're the guys that put all the work in to set it up. So why wouldn't it be? Why would they hand it over to somebody else to run it? And, you know, sure. And they planned it all very carefully, didn't they? So that the people that are actually making all the decisions, nobody really knows who they are. They're not voted in. There's no democracy at the top. And the people that are voted in, they're all just window dressing. They've got no power to make legislation or do anything at all. They give them a fat salary in the hopes that the fat salary will prevent them from having loyalty to their nation and pointing that out. And a big pension. They think they'll buy their silence, and the general people, and the general public will just go along with it and just assume that these guys at the top, they've got our best interests at heart. Is
well, we've been aware of Kurnov Kalergin for a number of years, and yet I've never heard him mentioned yet in mainstream. Not one politician has mentioned his name, because they know that the evidence is there in his book, although I believe they've kind of banned it so people can't get hold of it, but for the wrong reason, not for the right reason. But there's enough people out there who know about it and have got copies or made copies of it, although it hasn't been totally translated into English, another reason, you know, because they don't want it translated into English. But the thing is, not one politician, in all these arguments you hear on TV and Question Time and that, never is his name mentioned.
Well, they say it's a conspiracy theory. I mean, if you go on this page about Kudinov Kalergi, it will take you to another page, which is the Kalergi plan, and then it will tell you that this is all a conspiracy theory. It's not fact, and yet you know it's telling you that it was all set up by Freemasons with a view to setting up a new world order. So that you know they'll tell you what's going on. Yeah,
I saw a signpost in communism by the back door of the Kudinov Kalergi. Area. It was just like, I mean, if it's a conspiracy theory, what are they making a signpost for in his honour?
You know, they're pointing it out. It's like E. Michael Jones says, you know, when it's a Jew that says Jews are responsible for gay marriage, that's okay. But when E. Michael Jones points it out that this Jew said they were responsible for it, oh, that's anti-Semitism. When we point this out, it's a conspiracy theory. When they point it out at Wikipedia, you know, we're supposed to think, oh, this is great. This guy's, you know, he's one of the good guys. And he's obviously not.
Well, it's like the protocols, isn't it? You know, the more they deny it, the more it comes true.
Yeah. After Austria joined Germany in 1938, Kalergi fled to Czechoslovakia and again in 1940 from France to the US. On the 22nd of July 1943, the National Socialists deprived him of his Doctor of Philosophy degree from the University of Vienna, with the argument that as a Jew, he should not be dignified with an academic degree of a German university. His doctorate degree was re-granted again, unfortunately, on the 15th of May 1955. But, you know, they've got a point there, really. Yep. You know, he should really have gone to a Jewish university. I mean, I don't know if this was just handed to him either. That's the thing. You don't know whether he worked to get this degree or whether it was just handed to him, like given to him as an honour.
Well, they lured him with praise, won't they? Like I said, after World War II, the Germans are defeated. They have no military opposition. America, Soviet Union even, Britain, they're all in favour of this Masonic worldwide cabal. So, you know, they will go to town and get the benefit.
Well, they do tend to honour people with degrees as well, if they like them, without them actually having studied for one. They give them a doctorate, honorary doctorate.
Well, this is right, yeah.
In the winter of 1945, Truman read an article by Kalergi in the December issue of the Collier's magazine on the integration of Europe. His article so impressed the Freemason Truman that it was adopted as the official policy of the United States. So he's worked on them all in Europe. He's worked on them all in Europe. He's got all the heads of state to go along with it, and now he's gone across the pond. Place. Yeah, now he's working on all the Americans to get them in into this idea as well. I guess. Yeah, I guess the UN must have played into it as well after the war. Oh,
I'm sure they did.
You know, let's get this UN together along the same lines. Let's have a look at his philo-Semitism, because he was a big fan of the Jews. Kudinov Kalergi published a book against anti-Semitism all the way back in 1901. Following a critique of the new racial theories, and it doesn't tell us what this critique was, he declared that the essence of anti-Semitism amounted to nothing more credible than fanatical religious hatred. And that's still that cover story they try and push today, isn't it? People just don't like the Jews because they don't like their religion. You know, it's got nothing to do with that. It's to do with their behaviour as a group. The overrepresentation in things that harm the nation, such as banking, pornography, this push for teaching children about homosexuality and transsexualism, all these negative things, and the taking religion out of politics and attacking all our European heroes and making them out to be bad guys. Jews are massively overrepresented in that, and that's the cause of why people criticize them. People don't criticize them because they killed Jesus. That's the cover story, isn't it?
I got a comment once on YouTube. Somebody said, "What have the Jews ever done to you?" Where do I start?
There was a video, a Tommy Robinson video, that was attacking Mark Cullett, and in that they were saying, "Well, the Jews don't go out and proselytize anyone. So why are people against the Jews? They're lying when they say that." Nobody says that. Nobody's against the Jews because I think people are trying to turn them into Jews, well, religious Jews. I mean, they do try to turn us into spiritual Jews, but they don't try to make us follow the Jewish religion. I mean, that's a laughable idea. The people that don't understand this stuff, I think that, they must fall for it. Otherwise, these Jews wouldn't make those excuses if they didn't work.
Oh, they work. I saw it in that YouTube video.
He traced that fanaticism to religious bigotry that originated in the promulgation of the Torah under Ezra. So what he's basically doing there, he's validating that, this Jewish idea that the Jews are the Israelites, even though we know they're not, they're the Canaanites. According to the elder Kudno-Kalergi, Jewish religious bigotry provoked opposition from the relatively tolerant Greco-Roman polytheists, eliciting their anti-Judaic reaction. Kalergi credited the Jews with originating religious intolerance and condemned it as a violation of genuine religious principles. He branded every sort of anti-Judaism as unchristian. He further urged liberal Christians and Jews to ally in protecting both of their religions and religion as such against the emerging menace of secularism. So he was pushing this idea of Judeo-Christianity.
Yeah, which is watching America, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he succeeded with doing all of that. Despite his opposition to racial theory, Kudno-Kalergi agreed that Jews are racially distinct, although he pointed out that there is no Semitic race because Semitic is an ethno-linguistic group. I would go along with that as well. Semitic is a language. It's not a racial definition. But he equivocated by also remarking that the charges that Semites were uncreative were belied by civilizations formed by the Assyrians and Babylonians, who spoke Semitic languages. Now, just stop there. But I mean, his argument doesn't add up there, because he's saying, well, what you're just talking about here is Semite is a language. And it's not a race. But then he's saying, well, because the Assyrians and the Babylonians, they spoke a Semitic language and they also built a civilization, that means today's Jews are capable of building a civilization. Not just because they spoke the same language. Negroes speak the same language as us. Negroes speak English. Doesn't mean they're capable of building a civilization. And the Assyrians and the Babylonians...
Somewhere on £200,000 a week and can't score from 6 yards.
Yeah. Well,
Sorry about that.
Assyrians and Babylonians, they were related to Shem. They were Shemites. They were related to the Israelites. They're the same type of people as the Israelites, but not the same type of people as today's Jews. And Yiddish isn't, that can't be traced back to the Old Testament anyway.
It's another story, isn't
it? Yeah.
Exactly.
He further sought to defend the Jews against charges of parasitic greed and cowardice with anecdotal counterexamples of Jewish industriousness and martial courage. Again, that's the excuse they would always use. Always come up with an anecdote. Oh, yes, but there's this one Jew that I know that isn't like that. There's this one Jew that I know that fought well in the war. And they always come up with the exception to the rule. And this is the excuse this is the excuse that people use themselves as well. They will refuse to believe the truth because there'll be, one Muslim guy that they know who's friendly towards them, or one black girl that they know that goes to their church that isn't a drug addict or whatever. And they will use that as an excuse. So he's using that as an excuse here, saying because there are exceptions to the rule doesn't exist. And that's not, that's not a valid argument. In an interview in the first Pan-European Congress in 1926, Richard Kudinov-Kalergi expressed the support of Jews by the Pan-European movement and the benefits to Jews with the elimination of racial hatred and economic rivalry brought by the United States of Europe. And again, that's a Masonic thing, isn't it? Supporting the Jews. Isn't that one of their Masonic oaths? You have to support the Jews?
Well, it's the Jewish organization from start to finish, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's one of the degrees that actually is quite bold in stating that, you know, that they have to support the Jews in what they do, as well as, what is it, orphans and widows, and stand up for the Jews. Rabbi must have put it in
there.
The
Jews invented the organization. It's always going to be in there somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at his plan then. Let's have a look at the essence of his plan. In his book, Practitioner...
this is what people do not realise who do these videos and spout on about racism.
In his book, Practitioner Idealismus, Kalergi explains that the citizens of the future United States of Europe, which obviously is the EU, will not be the people of the old continent, but a new mixed breed, the products of thorough and widespread miscegenation. He states that the peoples of Europe should interbreed with Asians and other non-white races to create a multiracial population with no clear sense of tradition or identity and therefore easily controlled by the ruling elite. Kalergi proclaims the need to abolish the right of nations to self-determination and outlines the breakup of nation-states through the use of ethnic separatist movements and the destruction of the nations themselves through mass migration. In order for Europe to be easily controlled by the future elite, Kalergi proposes the creation of a homogeneous, mixed-breed population. And as to who should be the new elite, Kalergi is particularly illuminating on this point. Now we have a quote here, direct quote. The man of the future will be of mixed race. The races and classes of today will gradually disappear due to the elimination of space, time, and prejudice. The Eurasian Negroid race of the future, similar in appearance to the ancient Egyptians, will replace the current diversity of peoples and the diversity of individuals. Instead of destroying European Judaism, Europe, against her will, refined and educated this people, driving them to their future status as a leading nation through this artificial evolutionary process. It is not surprising that the people that escaped from the ghetto prison became the spiritual nobility of Europe. Thus, the compassionate care given by Europe created a new breed of aristocrats. This happened when the European feudal aristocracy crashed because of the emancipation of the Jews due to the actions taken by the French Revolution. So it admits there that it was the emancipation of the Jews. Although no textbook mentions Kalergi, his ideas are the guiding principles of the European Union. The belief that the peoples of Europe should be mixed with Africans and Asians to destroy our identity, to break down traditional ways of living and create a single mixed race is the reason for community policies that promote minority interests. The underlying motives are not at all humanitarian, because the driving power behind this ruthless regime dominating the EU is planning the greatest genocide in history. Because that's what it is when you wipe out a people, when you replace a people, when you interbreed with a people so that they are no longer a people, that's genocide. I think that's what people don't get, Dennis, isn't it? It's
well, yeah, and what people probably don't realise is at some stage it will be forced on us, because there will be a time when everybody will be sussed and refuse to do it, and that is the next stage, just as they tried in France with Mitterrand when he threatened to bring in laws to force people to race mix. It'll happen again.
There was a news story just the other day with a white woman that was stabbed because she turned down a black guy, and the black guy assumed that she was turning him down because she didn't want to sleep with someone who was black. And this black guy was a friend of hers. So that's somebody that was a friend of hers that treated her like that. You imagine, you know, these blacks that aren't friends.
Friendly.
And, they chat up a white girl. Do you want a drink? And the white girl says, well, no, I'd rather not. you know, the black guy turns around and glasses her. You did that because I'm black. You would have had a drink off the white guy. Why did you not have a drink from me? And this is a frightening world that we're living in now with this, you know, with this idea that you just, a Negro or anyone non-white can just accuse someone of being racist and get away with whatever they do.
Don't forget, on top of all this, you've got the inclusion of Sharia law, which will come to pass once enough Muslims form their own parties and win democratic elections.
Yeah, I don't know if he foresaw that. Maybe, you know, they're trying to create a new world religion, aren't they? With this idea of Abrahamic faiths and interfaith dialogue. They've already got the Judeo-Christian bit. They just want us to add Islamo to that now, don't they? And then they've got their world faith.
Yeah, I think they'll have Islamic countries. I think they're trying to make Britain Islamic as well as other parts of Europe, simply on the numbers.
Yeah, they'll try and blend it all together, won't they? And create a new religion to go with this new blended people that they're creating. Well, we've mentioned We mentioned the award earlier. There's this prestigious prize is awarded every 2 years by the Kudenhove Kalergi Foundation to Europeans who have excelled in promoting this criminal plan. And they probably don't describe it as that. They probably say it's for promoting the EU.
But it certainly is. It's a traitor and it's a genocide. So.
Well, we got some of these names here. 1956, Winston Churchill. 1963, yep. Ted Heath. 1972, Roy Jenkins. 1982, Juan Carlos of Spain. 1987, Henry Kissinger. 1988, Helmut Kohl and Francis Francois Mitterrand. 1999, Tony Blair. Had he gone to war in Iraq by then?
Probably. But it probably been planned if he hadn't.
I think he had. So they're giving him this award after that. Well, of course, that's going to encourage refugees into Europe, isn't it? So, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
That's why he's got that one. 2000, Bill Clinton. 2004, Republic of Ireland, Pat Cox. 2004, Pope John Paul II.
Yep.
2006, Luxembourg, Jean-Claude Juncker, who's obviously in
Germany only exists to serve Israel. Quote.
2008, Angela Merkel.
God.
We can do it. Open the borders. Yep. What is it? Million refugees she let in?
Come on down, yeah.
Well, she did that after being given this award. You know, they must have given her this award in anticipation of that.
No doubt, yeah.
2015, Martin Schulz. Again, Germany.
Yeah, he's the guy who said about Israel serving Israel. Yeah, I got that wrong.
Yeah, he's a horrible creature. Straight out of
who's next.
One of the Sturmer illustrations, Martin Schulz is. Yes, Vatican City, Argentina, Pope Francis.
Yep.
Given the Kudenhove Kalergi Award. 2017, Timothy Garton Ash, an Oxford historian. Why
I didn't know who this guy was. Historian be given it?
Obviously for falsifying history, I would have thought, wouldn't you?
Well, you know what they're like at Oxford. My alarm bells always go off. So I went to his website and he's asking for people to stand up against this Brexit and everything else. You know what I mean? Like he's certainly vocal. I hadn't heard of him, but obviously coming from the UK, I looked him up and, yep, he's got the medal in 2017.
Died in the wall, lefty. And 2018, Emmanuel Macron for services
the banker,
to the EU.
President, yeah.
French are furious at him. I mean, his loyalty is the EU. It's not to France. All he's interested in is doing things for the EU.
All the governments, it's just like the British government as well.
Traitors. Well, that's the potted list there. We've got a final bit here, a final few quotes about actually what genocide is and the immigration agenda. The facilitation of genocide is also the basis of the constant appeals from the United Nations demanding that we accept millions of immigrants to help counter the low birth rate among Europeans. According to a report published in January 2000 by the Population Division of the United Nations in New York, under the title Immigration Replacement, A Solution to Declining and Aging Populations, Europe will need to accept 159 million migrants by 2025. The citing of such precise numbers is evidence of a premeditated plan. I think they had the idea that they wanted to do this, and then they just thought, well, what can we come up with as an excuse for it? We'll just say that they're getting old and they're not producing enough of their own. How can we get them to not produce enough of their own?
The wars as well, where it used that one as well, when there weren't a woman and child in sight. They were just all men of fighting age.
This promotion of abortion plays into this as well, doesn't it? You know, all the white people, you abort all your babies and we'll just bring in Africans to replace them. Don't mind that they can't actually speak any English or actually do any work. They're just the same as you. Clearly, a low birth rate can easily be reversed with appropriate measures to support families, which is what they're doing in Hungary and Poland and other countries now in the East. And it is equally clear that the introduction of alien genes will do nothing to preserve our genetic heritage, but will destroy it. The consequence of current policies promoting multiracialism is to create a weakened, disparate population without national, historical, or cultural cohesion. In short, the policies of the Kalergi Plan have been and still are the basis of official government policies intent upon the genocide of the peoples of Europe through mass immigration. G. Brock Chisholm, a former director of the World Health Organization, demonstrated this well when he said, "What people everywhere need to do is to limit births and promote mixed marriages between the different races. The outcome will be the creation of a single race throughout the world, which can be directed by a central authority." Interesting. See, they think it's going to end all racism, don't they? If they can do this, there'll be no more racism.
Well, yeah, and all wars. You know, there'll be just one army, and everyone will be treated as a slave.
Yeah, without killing everyone, just by replacing everyone with something that's never existed before. Some Mongol type.
It's demonic and it's insane. I can't think of enough words to actually to really say what it all is. It's just a mad scientist warped movie.
It's got to be the most evil thing ever. Replacing the nations that God created with nations that weren't created in the image of God but were created by man.
And run Christmas adverts to help the cause.
Yeah, pushing all these adverts, you know, and that is genocide. Forcibly replacing one race with another, whether it's done, you know, through encouraging them by the government and encouraging them to mix and marry one another, or whether it's done, you know, at the end of a gun, it's still the same thing. The end result is still the same. Genocide. You end up with
products the same,
really. Less white people and more non-whites, and that's all that diversity is.
Finally, once we've gone. That's it.
Yeah. Finally, there are no references to practical idealism found on the site of the Pan-Europa movement. What a surprise. And a Dutch site says that the book is informally banned in Europe. I'd like to read a translated copy of it, Dennis. I really would. To see everything else.
Yeah, there's a website, I think, trying just that. So I'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, I'll see if you can find that if you can. Now, I've heard the alt-right and the civic nationalists, I've heard them talking about the Kalergi Plan, but they seem to miss that bit about the Jews in there, about the Jews running it.
Well,
or else maybe they accept that bit, you know. Maybe
well, Barbara Spector couldn't have spelled it out anymore, could she?
Oh, yeah, well, she was saying, well, you know, Europe isn't going to exist unless it does this, unless it imports all these people. Europe is just not going to exist anymore. And that's the idea that they're pushing there. That's the bit that it was saying there, that the UN is pushing. If you don't import all these Africans, the Europeans are just going to die out.
Don't forget, on the reverse side of the coin, Israel will not accept any.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Can't have Jews blending themselves out or accepting in refugees. They're just facilitators for that to happen to everyone else's country. That's what they're for. All right, Dennis, we've reached the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on today.
Yes.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
Radio Area.